I got to visit him at the hospital when he was in there, and it was really funny because after you get burned, you really, like, they put you on these really strong, like, medications, and they make you nauseous, and you don't really want to eat. So he's laying in the hospital bed, and he doesn't want to eat anything, and he's just like, oh, he has no appetite. And they're trying to force him to eat because when you get burned, your body, like, your metabolism goes really crazy, and you're supposed to eat, like, three times what you normally eat to, like, get healthy again. And so he's like, no, I'm not eating any of the food. Well, there was this one nurse named Shayla. And Shayla, as you can imagine, she was a big nurse, right? You know what I'm saying? She was one of those nurses you don't want to mess around with. And every time, like, they'd bring him a meal, he would just leave it there. So Shayla would show up, you know, like, right after the meal, be like, did you eat? And she's, like I said, she's a big girl. And so Shayla would walk in, and she'd be like, eyeing the food, and be like, how come you need the food? And she threatened him this one time, and she goes, thank you. I know, I was going to walk on that. She threatened him this one time, and she said, well, if you don't want to eat your food, I'm going to have to do this the hard way. And then she pulls out this needle that looked like a samurai sword. It was like this long. And she's like, we're going to stick an IV in you. And what they do is, if you don't eat, they stick this tube thing in you, and then they feed you through the tube. It's nasty. It's like, I guess it's just liquid. But you're not actually eating. They're just like injecting it into your body. Like, I don't need help eating, apparently. You know, don't ever do that to me. But Shayla's like this big woman, and so he ate all his food. But there was something interesting. As I was sitting there, I was afraid he'd be asleep or whatever, and I wouldn't get to visit in Orlando, so I brought something to read. And as I'm reading the passage for tonight, studying over what we're studying about, what we're going to study, in John chapter 6, it deals kind of with the same type of thing. We're looking at a whole lot of people who are interested in what? Do you guys remember what we've been studying the last couple weeks? What are these people absolutely infatuated in, and they're following Jesus around for it? Food. Yeah, good. So they want this food, and wherever Jesus goes, they go. Why? They're A, they're hungry. Other people, what do they want to see? Miracles. Yeah, good. And so they're like, put on a show for us, Jesus. Do another miracle. Make more food. And every time they walked up to Jesus, instead of going, hey, you're the Son of God, like, this is amazing what you do, we want to worship you, they're going, hey, we need some more food over here. You know, table 9, right here. Like, that's all they're concerned about. And so Jesus, in this passage tonight, talks to them a little bit about their hunger. And since all they can think about is food, 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 he starts to talk to them in their terms. And so he's going to use some terms that might sound a little weird to us tonight. We might look at it and be a little grossed out, actually, by what Jesus says, because the audience was grossed out when they heard it. So keep that in mind, that Jesus is taking this picture of this food that is the only thing on their mind, and he's going to try to explain his message to them through that tonight. So check out John chapter 6 with me. We're going to finish this chapter tonight. We're in verse 41. And it says this: at this, the Jews began to grumble about him because he said, I am the bread that came down from heaven. They said, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say, I come down from heaven? Stop grumbling among yourselves, Jesus answered to them. No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up at the last day. All right, so let's stop there for a second. So far, I've been giving you a list of what? We've been getting this big, long list of what kind of person. We've been describing someone. Who are we describing through this passage? What? Followers. What kind of followers? You got a big old crowd of people walking behind Jesus. Isaac?
Disciples.
Disciples. Some of them were. What have we been describing about these people that are following after Jesus? Some were in it for the show. What do we call that type of people? Are they true followers? Yeah. They're a bunch of fakes. They're false followers. They're walking after Jesus, but are they actually, like, following Jesus, the Son of God? No. And so we're going to continue that list. And the first thing that we see here tonight in this is that Jesus says something to them. Stop grumbling among yourselves. You know what that tells me about people that are following after Jesus that don't necessarily care at all about Jesus? Is that they're really prone to, like, when they're in church, talk really good about it. Like, these people, when they were around Jesus, they were like, sweet, do another miracle, Jesus. And they seemed like they were his biggest fans. And the second Jesus took a step off to the side, what were they saying? Oh, how could he say that? why would he do that? And they start grumbling. I don't think people that follow Jesus are going to sit there and just trash him the second he turns away. And then we're like, well, how does that really apply to us, Rob? Like, what's it saying to us? Have you ever put yourself in this situation? Like, when you come to church and you're with people that follow Jesus, you're following Jesus with them. And sometimes it's a lot easier, isn't it, when we're with people that follow Jesus? It's a lot easier for me to sit around you guys and sit here and praise Jesus than when I'm with people that couldn't care less about Jesus. And maybe for you, that might mean like in your school. As you're sitting in your classes and your parents, I hope they're not in your classes, that'd be a little awkward. Your friends around you, they don't care about Christ. They don't care about church, unless you're homeschooler, and that'd be normal. Right? They don't care about church, they don't care about religion, they don't care about Jesus at all. And as they're sitting there, what are the type of things a lot of people that don't care about Jesus talk about? Usually it's not good stuff. Usually it's not stuff that you want to fill your mind with. And as you sit there, you could either, hey, I'll just talk with them because it's the easy thing to do. I'll be just like them. I'll have the same filth come out of my mouth. I'll tell the same dirty jokes that they tell. I'll trash people just the same way that they trash other people. Because really, I mean, they're doing it. It's easier to be here and do that. Is it easy to be the one that says, look, I follow Christ. Like, I love Jesus. I can't talk with you like that. Now, it might be easy in your head to say, yeah, I do that. But actually put yourself in the situation. Actually try that tomorrow when you go to school. Because I don't care what school you go to, you walk out these doors. You don't even have to walk out the doors. Probably tonight, before we leave this room, you're going to have an opportunity to be around people whose mouths are going to be full of trash, and you're going to have the opportunity to say, I'm either going to stand up for Christ because I really follow him, or I'm going to be just like you. Because it's a lot easier. Because I don't really follow Christ. And the choices that I make don't matter because it's all for show anyway. Church for me is a social club where I can go impress people and hang out. So why would I change anything about my life when I'm not around Christ? These people are in that boat. The second Jesus takes a step off to the side, there they are. Right back in the same garbage that they were in before. And Jesus actually hears them and he calls them out. Imagine if Jesus tonight was sitting right here and he called you straight out. He looks you straight in the eyes and goes, you, yeah, the one that I died on a cross for. The one that I was beaten for. The one that I gave everything for. You, I'm talking to you, yes. The one that's grumbling about me right now. The one whose mind is full of trash right now and not doesn't even care about me. The one that I gave everything for. You, I'm talking to you. How would you respond if you were them in that situation right here in this passage? Like the Son of God who gave everything for me is calling me out right now. Am I living for him? Or am I just walking behind him saying I'm a follower? And then it goes on in verse 45. It says, it is written in the prophets. This is from Isaiah. He says, they will all be taught by God. Everyone who listens to the Father and learns from him comes to me. No one has seen the Father except the one who is from God. Only he has seen the Father. I tell you the truth. He who believes has everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Your forefathers ate the manna in the desert, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which a man may eat and not die. You see, these followers had another problem. Here's another description of them. They had no hunger at all for God's truth. They didn't care about God's truth. They cared about what they would see, how they were going to be entertained, what was going to be best for them, and getting their stomachs full. And they didn't really care what truth was. And you see, I think most of us, if we were to be honest and talk about ourselves honestly tonight, are in this situation. We don't care about God's truth. You see, only true followers of Christ really crave the truth of God. Many of us can just be happy living the life that we know, being satisfied the way we want to be satisfied, having the things that make us happy, and we feel really good. And as long as that's cool right now, and I feel good right now, I'm awesome. Like, I don't care about God's truth. I can't see it. I can't smell it. I can't taste it. What's it going to do for me right now? And so we're just like these people sometimes, right? Like, we don't care about God's truth. We don't care about what actually matters and will last. We care about right now gratification, make me feel good. I'll say anything to anyone so that they praise me and make me feel good and feel special and make me feel like I have an identity. I'll do anything I can to fit in with this group over here so that I have friends to hang around and I feel like I belong. And it's all about this right now. And Jesus is standing in front of this crowd offering them something way bigger than anything that could happen right now. And they don't care. They don't care about the stuff that actually lasts, like what this world is really made out of. The God of all creation. Try to grasp that. Like, think in your head for 1 second for me, but before you completely space out. Close your eyes and try to imagine the God of all creation. Right? If he's small, try again. All right? And if he's still small, smack yourself in the face and then try again, because he's huge. This God who created every last molecule that exists loves you. Like, sometimes I don't get that and I feel like I need to just go knock, 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 like on my head, like, he loves me. I don't deserve to be loved by someone so huge and amazing and awesome and perfect. I'm just me, and yet he loves me. And he loves you. And he wants you to see that this life is so much bigger than the dumb stuff that we think it's about. And these people just didn't get it. Because they weren't truly following after Jesus for the truth. To see beyond this physical world. They were following after him for their own reasons. And many of us can fall in that boat. Verse 51, he says, I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. Then the Jews began to argue sharply among themselves. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? So Jesus pretty much walks up to these people. You know what he goes? He goes, hey, you guys are still so focused on this bread. Stop thinking about food. Like, they have to have my complex. All I think about is food all the time. These people were just like me, right? Food, food, food. Paul, I know you agree with me on this, all right? Don't even look at me like that. I love Paul. These people could only think about the food, and Jesus looks back and says, fine, if all you can think about is food, let me speak in your terms. I am the food that you need. My body is what you need. My blood is what you need. And they're going, oh, gross. Like, you cannibal? You want us to eat you? Like, it's disgusting. Like, hold your arm out, take a bite, everybody. And they're, you know what they're actually arguing about here? They're going, how is he going to have enough of him to go around? Really? That's what you think he's talking about? They're still not grasping that Jesus is trying to just paint this picture for them so they understand that life is about more than food and the garbage that so often we run after. Life is about Christ and the body that he gives us that we need to eat of. He's talking about his body on the cross as he gives it as a sacrifice for you so your body doesn't have to burn forever. He takes your place. And his blood is what cleans your sin. And so as he's saying this to them, they're still thinking food, and they're thinking, you want us to eat you? That's nasty. And they start fighting among themselves. And then in verse 53, he says, Jesus said to them, I tell you the truth, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, all right, he's like pushing straight through with this thing, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. If you're visiting tonight, you're going to be like, what does this church preach? Hold on. We're not stopping here. And I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is real food, and my blood is real drink. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me. Remember that phrase. I'm going to ask you in a minute what I said. And I in him. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your forefathers ate manna and died, but he who feeds on this bread will live forever. He said this while teaching in the synagogue in Capernaum. So Jesus looks at these people one more time and says, all right, you're still not getting it, okay? I'm not telling you to eat my flesh and hold my arm out and take a bite. Don't fight over who's going to get the calf muscle. You know what I mean? Like, that'd be nasty. What he's saying here is, you need to understand what's actually going to last. You need to understand what's actually going to matter in your life and make a difference. And he's using this picture of food, A, because they're thinking about food, and B, because there's this awesome similarity between what we have to do with salvation and what you have to do with food. First, you have to realize you're hungry, right? Like, you don't just eat, unless you're like me, you just eat because it's fun, but like... Otherwise, you're like, oh, I'm hungry, I need to go out to eat. And that's your signal, like, I have a need. And all of us have to realize that we have this need, that we have sin and we're broken and alone. We really don't have a whole lot of value. But the God of all creation says, you are absolutely priceless to me. You are so valuable, I'll die for you and give this body and this blood for you. And so we have to realize that we're hungry for Jesus. And then it's not enough just to realize it and just be like, oh sweet, like that Jesus stuff's cool. Like, yeah, I read my Bible once in a while. And we kind of like look at the church from far off, and we might even like serve in the church and do some stuff. But let's say I had a big Five Guys burger. Okay? Anybody like Five Guys? And it's got all the works on it, and it's sitting on the table, and I walk up to that thing and I touch it and I squeeze the bun, you know, like the grease dribbles out, and like, yeah, look at that. Right? And then I sniff it. Smells so good, you know? I might even take a little lick on the top of the bun, like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? And you like look at it and walk around it, and maybe you sing a little song to it, and you're like, Five Guys burgers! Woo! You know? And you do, and you lift your, ah, yeah. But let's say after that, like, I sing my little song, and maybe I jump, and I put my hands up, and then I leave. And I never actually put the burger in my mouth, chew, and swallow. Where did I go wrong there? You see, Jesus is comparing the salvation to food because a lot of us, many followers of Christ, are all about the tasting and the touching and the jumping and the singing to the burger. Well, maybe not singing, but that'd be weird. But sometimes I've done that. But anyway... we do all that, but we forget to actually like partake of this. Like, we never go so far to actually put it in us and let it change us and actually reap the benefits of this food, this salvation that's in us, changing us, making us better, healing the parts of us that need healing. You see, food is no good unless you actually eat it. Salvation is no good unless you actually partake of it. When we say this phrase, like, take Jesus in your heart, that's so kind of oversaid, we don't understand what it means anymore. This is the heart of that. You actually take Jesus and He affects your heart. He changes the way you think and love and speak and act. And He makes a difference in you because it's applied to your life. You're not just singing about it. You're not just talking to people in a church. You're actually living for Christ. And as you live for Him and accept His salvation, He changes you, and it actually is good for you. You leave the burger on the table, it doesn't do you any good. You leave your salvation off to the side, and you're just content watching it from afar. Like, that doesn't do you any good. You actually have to make it part of you. And so Jesus hits that point home with these people. And then in verse 60, this is what happens here. All right, listen to their response. See if this might be you. Before I do that, I'm going to ask you, what was that phrase I said? Remain in me. If you actually partake of that food, you actually like partake of salvation and it changes you, He says that you will remain in Christ. In other words, you're not going to walk off like these people in the crowd just gave up. Look what they do. As Jesus says this, look at the response in verse 60. On hearing it, after He just gets finished telling them that if you really mean this, you're not going to walk away. On hearing it, many of His disciples said, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" Aware that His disciples were grumbling about this, Jesus said to them, "Does this offend you? What if you see the Son of Man ascend to where He was before? The Spirit gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. The words I have spoken to you are spirit and they are life. Yet there are some of you who do not believe." For Jesus had known from the beginning which of them didn't believe and who would betray him. He went on to say, "This is why I told you that no one can come to me unless the Father has enabled him." And in verse 66, "From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him." He just got finished saying, you actually have to partake of the salvation if you want to remain in me. And then he says, does this offend you? They pretty much say, yeah. This is a really hard thing for you to tell us. Because let me tell you how, as we read that, how they understood this. You need to be willing to give up all of it for Christ. He's looking at these people saying, are you willing to surrender everything for me? Are you willing to give up all your desires, turn away from your sin, repent, and turn to me and trust me alone for salvation? And they're like, whoa, no, I'm not. And they left. They just walked away. For us to be people that frequent churches and come to church a lot, we might read something like that and just say, I'm fine. Check off my list. I'm okay. But if we really grasp what Christ is saying to these people and say it to ourselves, would we be some of those people that just go, no, I'm really not willing to do that, Jesus. I am offended by your gospel. I don't want to give it up for you. I don't want to follow you alone. And then we walk away. Are you willing to radically give up the parts of your life that are holding you back from accepting Christ? Christians in here, followers, let's say followers instead, followers of Christ, is your life radically different because you knew the God of all creation and He saved you? Is your life radically changed because you stared into the face of the most amazing being to ever exist and you have to fall on your face before Him and go, whoa? Are you different? Or are you part of this group that has to just look back and say, look, it offends me too much. I can't accept that. And this group just had to look at Jesus and walk away. Let's look at what his actual disciples did. And we'll end with this. Verse 67. You don't want to leave too, do you? Jesus asked the 12, his closest disciples. Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. Then Jesus replied, have I not chosen you, the 12? Yet one of you is a devil. He meant Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, who, though one of the 12, was later to betray him. You see, true followers believe on Jesus, and they depend completely on him with their lives. They surrender to Christ in a way that changes them. Most of those people weren't willing to do it. There are a lot of followers in this chapter that we've studied, and there were a lot of different reasons why they walked behind Jesus, hoping they could see something, getting some food out of it. Close your eyes for a second and ask yourself right now. And if you're being distracting and you know it, please stop. If you're acting right now, close your mouth for me. Because there's people in this room that need to just take a minute and talk to God. Just ask yourself why you follow Jesus. Why do I do it? As you think about that for a second, I want to read you a story written by a boy who passed away. And they found this essay in his room. And keep thinking, just talking to God, but try to listen. It's called The Room. In that place between wakefulness and dreams, I found myself in the room. There were no distinguishing features except for the one wall covered with small index card files.
They were like the ones in libraries that list titles by author or subject in alphabetical order. But these files, which stretched out from floor to ceiling and seemingly endless in either direction, had very different headings. As I drew near the wall of files, the first to catch my attention was that one that read, "Girls I've Liked." I opened it and began flipping through the cards. I quickly shut it, shocked to realize that I recognized their names written on each one. And then, without being told, I knew exactly where I was. This lifeless room with its small files was a crude catalog system for my life. Here were written the actions of my every moment, big and small, in a detail my memory couldn't match. A sense of wonder and curiosity, coupled with horror, stirred within me as I began randomly opening files and exploring their content. Some brought joy and sweet memories. Others a sense of shame, regret, so intense that I would look over my shoulder to see if anyone was watching. A file named Friends was next to one marked Friends I Have Betrayed. The titles ranged from the mundane to the outright weird. Books I've read, lies I've told, comfort I've given, jokes I laughed at. Some were almost hilarious in their exactness. Things I've yelled at my brothers. Others I couldn't laugh at. Things I've done in my anger. Things I've muttered under my breath at my parents. I never ceased to be surprised by the contents. Often there were many more cards than expected, sometimes fewer than I hoped. I was overwhelmed by the sheer volume of the life I had lived. Could it be possible that I had time in my years to fill each of these thousands or even millions of cards? But each card confirmed this truth. Each was written in my own handwriting. Each signed with my signature. When I pulled out the file marked TV shows I've watched, I realized the files grew to contain their contents. The cards were packed tightly, and yet after two or three yards, I hadn't found the end of the file. I shut it, shamed not so much by the quality of shows, but more by the vast time I knew that the file represented. When I came to a file marked Lustful Thoughts, I felt a chill run down my body. I pulled the file out only an inch, not willing to test its size, and drew out a card. I shuddered at its detailed content. I felt sick to think that such a moment had been recorded. An almost animal rage broke on me. One thought dominated my mind. No one must ever see these cards. No one must ever see this room. I have to destroy them. In an insane frenzy, I yanked the file out. Its size didn't matter now. I had to empty it and burn the cards. But as I looked at one end and began pounding it on the floor, I could not dislodge a single card. I became desperate and pulled out a card, only to find it as strong as steel when I tried to tear it. Defeated and utterly helpless, I returned the file to its slot. Leaning my forehead against the wall, I let out a long, self-pitying sigh. And then I saw it. The title bore, "People I Have Shared the Gospel With." The handle was brighter than those around it, newer, almost unused. I pulled on its handle and a small box, not more than 3 inches long, fell into my hand. I could count the cards it contained on one hand, and then the tears came. I began to weep, sobs so deep that they hurt. They started in my stomach and shook through me. I fell on a knee and cried. I cried out of shame from the overwhelming shame of it all. The rows of file shelves swirled in my tear-filled eyes. No one must ever, ever know of this room. I must lock it up and hide the key. But then as I pushed away the tears, I saw him. No, please, not him, not here, anyone but Jesus. I watched helplessly as he began to open the files and read the cards. I couldn't bear to watch his response. And in the moments I could bring myself to look at his face, I saw a sorrow deeper than any of my own. He seemed to intuitively go to the worst boxes. Why did he have to read every one? Finally, he turned and looked at me from across the room. He looked at me with pity in his eyes. But this was a pity that didn't anger me. I dropped my head, covered my face with my hands, and began to cry. He walked over and put his arm around me. He could have said so many things, but he didn't say a word. He just cried with me. Then he got up and walked back to the wall of files. Starting at one end of the room, he took out a file. And one by one, began to sign his name over mine on each card. "No," I shouted, rushing to him. All I could find to say was "no, no," as I pulled the card from him. His name shouldn't be on these cards. But there it was, written in red, so rich, so dark, and so alive. The name of Jesus covered mine. It was written with his blood. He gently took the card back. He smiled a sad smile and began to sign the cards. I don't think I'll ever understand how he did it so quickly. But the next instant, it seemed I heard him close the last file and walk back to my side. He placed his hand on my shoulder and said, "It is finished." I stood up and he led me out of the room. There was no lock on its door. There were still cards to be written. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life." John 3:16. As I read that story by a boy who had just passed away, I just sat and thought about my life. And this story isn't theologically sound. It's not going to be found in the Bible. But it did make me realize one thing. What really matters in my life? When I get to the end, what am I going to look back at and say that actually mattered? Because Christ's point in this whole chapter was, do you follow Christ because he matters? Or are you just along for the ride? This is what I want us to do close tonight, because we're going to go into like a really intense, fun time. I want you to get with some people around you. And before we go be goofy and crazy, I want you just to hug the people around you and love on them and pray with them. And let's stop, hold on, not yet. I know you love each other, it's awesome. I want you to be absolutely bluntly honest with the people that you're with. I don't want it just to be goof off time. But I want you to actually be able to share with one another what you're going through. And I don't mean like, hey, let's have a gossip session about my life. But if you're like, I seriously don't know where I stand with this stuff. I'm not sure how I feel about whether I'm a follower for real or if I'm just along for a ride. And I want to be standing firm on the fact that Christ is my Lord. Will you share that with the people in your group? Share that with a leader that's sitting with you. If you need to come up here and talk to me, I'll be sitting right here. Come talk to me. Do not leave this place tonight without knowing that. Do not leave this place tonight wondering, am I just along for the ride? All right? Go ahead and get in your groups and pray.